Bring up, you're always welcome to email them to us and we will attach them to the chat. We did miss out on the one person, so you sit up there and then you miss out on having able to be introduced. I apologize. Go ahead. Great. And I'm Anna Marie Garces with Urban Health Partnerships.
Lori Fuccini Joy with UHP.
Peter Dees with the Broward Metropolitan Planning Organization.
And Stuart Robertson with Kimley Horn.
That wraps up our Complete Streets team. So everyone has a sign-in sheet. Any question about the sign-in sheet? Great. How about agendas? Does everyone have? Thank you, Buffy. See, Buffy's always can make it happen real quick. That's why we love the MPO. Okay, so we have a mic here, and it's ready. Would anybody that's sitting behind me would like to speak? We'll just go ahead and hand over the mic. Does everyone have an agenda? Okay. So the first item today, we have we've got a request from the agenda to have one item pushed up of a few other items. So if there's no objection, we are going to do, before we go into evaluation performance measures, we're going to move up the TAC member updates because Tina Phillips, who's on our agenda for 255, has a conflict and will need to depart shortly. Ricardo, is that okay if we move that item up? Thank you so much. So how many of you were here the first year we started with Complete Streets? So isn't that exciting that there's a core group here that has stuck with it for the last few years? And Priscilla and Ricardo, I mean, you guys were here, you know. And Mark, I know you were here as my boss. Hold on.
What are you looking for?
Oh, sorry. I was looking for the tech presentation.
The tech? The touch. This is touch. No,
thank
it's
you.
A separate file.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So for those of you that remember, Broward Regional Health Planning Council won an award from the CDC. And that's what gave us, that was the impetus to begin the Broward Complete Streets Initiative and this TAC. And Urban Health Partnerships has been so fortunate to be able to be part of that core team from the very beginning. And today, if you can all join me in giving a warm welcome to the director of the TOUCH, Transforming Our Community's Health Initiative from the Broward Regional Health Planning Council, Tina Phillips is going to share with us their new Healthy Community Zones initiative.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. That was such a lovely introduction. I am so thrilled to be here after 3 years and to see the amount of work that's been done and ways that we can now partner together for a healthier Broward. To begin with, this is kind of the agenda of what we're going to go over today. Kind of where we are, what we are, what we're looking at for the healthy community zones, and the ways that you guys can participate. The healthy community zones is coming out of work that we've done with TOUCH, Transforming Our Community's Health, and now, which is Partnerships Transforming Our Community's Health in Broward County. As many of you know, we have four different areas that we work in: tobacco-free living, active living and healthy eating, clinical and community linkages for prevention, and healthy and safe built environments. Now, throughout this process, we have worked very diligently to break down silos so that we could actually have areas where all four of these elements were put into place so that we could have a really healthy community. And what we found out, and I'm sure all of you know, Broward County is big. It is really big. So what we've done is to look at the partnerships that we have and to actually go into specific areas and look at what can we do together, partnering with different organizations and being able to partner with you, the different cities, because you know your cities better than anyone. These healthy community zones are where we would have existing community assets as well as existing community needs, and be able to work together for a healthier Broward by combining those resources. This gives you kind of an overview of how we look at a healthy community zone. Everything from healthy eating, active living opportunities for improved access to healthy food and beverages, smoke-free parks, playgrounds, and beaches, also having a built environment that encourages physical activity, And finally, looking at how we can connect people, especially those who are living in health disparate areas, with the kinds of resources that they need in order to be as healthy as they possibly can. Now, this picture is absolutely difficult to read, but I think it's really important because it shows, this is a picture of Broward County, for those of you who are not able to see. And what it shows is those areas where we have health disparities, wealth disparities, and on top of that, educational disparities. And those educational disparities are seen by a large group of people who are not able to graduate from high school. For health disparities, we're looking at those health, preventable health disparities such as diabetes, type 2 diabetes that occur because of our unhealthy food environment. And then finally, the wealth disparities come from two ways, poverty in general and then family poverty, as looked at from the Earned Income Tax Credit. Now together, we know that if we work in some of these areas, and those areas are located in many of the cities that all of you represent, that we can actually work to improve the health of those communities. But we know that we can't do it. We can't do it by ourselves. We've got some great partners, amazing partners. And what we've seen is that in places like Dania Beach, where we started out with no funds going to the city of Dania Beach, none going to the CRA, but being able to work through with a subcontractor who helped create PATCH, People's Access to Community Horticulture. Now this PATCH has now grown into PATCHES. There will be one in Pompano Beach. There's one at the Housing Authority of the City of Fort Lauderdale. And because of that initial work that we did in one area, we now see changes occurring. No funds, no direct funds went to the city of Dania Beach, but they have instilled over $400,000 worth of assets because they've seen the difference it's made in their community. So what this is kind of giving you an overview of is that even though these partnerships will not receive any direct funding, they will receive the technical assistance programs and initiatives that we have underway. Everything from how we're working in child care centers, through the schools, into work sites, and then into the communities. So this is a very comprehensive look at how we can really make change in our community. And the benefits, as I said, the benefits are being able to have partnerships that work together with you in areas that are important to you. So we know that in the past we've worked with What Matters. We've also worked with the City of Sunrise, specifically on being able to provide a different way of having a or encouraging smoke-free parks that does not go against preemption. So through signage, with young lugs at play, signage, please don't smoke. Those kinds of opportunities exist for this, as well as I said, the work that we do in all the other areas. So together, we believe that this can make a huge difference. And so then the question is, who can apply? And how do you do this? Well, we're going to be submitting that RFP, but the RFP is a different kind of P than y'all are used to. This is a request for partnerships. And these partners can be anyone in the community who has a coalition around them, who understands the champions, understands the issues, also understands the assets and how to use them. So in general, it's just about anybody. We ask that the area be between 0.5 miles to 2 miles in diameter. We ask that there's a middle school or a high school involved in that area. And then we'll have ratings that have to do with whether or not it's a health, wealth, or educational disparity area. And then finally, we have how we can work together and then the willingness to partner. It is a different kind of mindset, but it's one we know that's worked and has worked here in Broward County. So how to apply? In the next few days, we will have the online application for the request for partnerships, and that will be at the touchbroward.org/HCZ, Healthy Community Zone. And in that application, it's very simple. It's not anything like you guys normally would see for a true RFP, but we feel like it gives the people who are interested in applying enough information about what's required of them as well as the benefits that they will receive.
Ask others.
And then the way that the RFP, the request for partnership, will be scored, you know, we're going to be looking at those areas that we know have to be involved in order for it to be successful. And then our timeline, the important dates. Right now, we have already begun the meeting with our partners, explaining to the CDC, who is funding us, exactly how we're going to do this and why we think it's going to make the kind of change that they're looking for. Then being able to have the RFP open April 15th, it will close on June 1st. June and July, we'll be spending that time actually looking over the proposals, meeting with the people who put in proposals, and determining exactly what we can do with those. And then in July, we'll actually choose those zones. There are a lot of different ways that you guys can participate, and I so hope that you take the time to look at the information and then also be able to participate. You know those people who are champions in your communities, who understand what's going on in each of the areas. You know, we've found that working with CRAs has been incredibly helpful to us. Being able to work with those areas that are in food deserts and those areas that are wealth and health disparity. So we hope that you check out the information that we have online and that you are able to put in an application. I also have the contact information for Alina Alberani. Alina will be the lead for this project at TOUCH, Partnerships Transforming Our Community's Health. As will, I'm sorry, my brain just went.
Anne Marie.
Yes, as well as Anne Marie Garza's at Urban Health Partnerships. Excuse me. And again, I thank you guys for your time, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Yes.
I saw a slide that mentioned shared visions.
Yes.
Shared visions for health, shared visions for economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have examples of those, or do those exist anywhere? Or
absolutely. What we found is with our work in Blanche Easley in Pompano Beach, and then also in Lauderhill at Lauderhill 612, with the education piece, what we found is when those students had a better understanding of exactly what it took to have a healthy food environment, and then understood the economic pieces of it, as well as the health pieces of it, they actually understood how each of these pieces came together. And so what we found is working with Dania Beach, working with Blanche Ely, and then also with Lauderdale 612, is that once we are able to educate our children to understand these pieces, and that we see that we can build an economic development model, what we've seen at Patch, what we've seen at Blanche Ely and at Lauderhill, then we have that next step that's needed for sustainability and for people to actually understand the importance of how healthy eating, active living, actually, and smoke-free parks actually come together for a healthier community. Does that answer your question? Does anybody else have any questions? Yes.
Could you give some examples of maybe some outcomes or projects you'd like to see come to fruition through this? Like, more precisely, what exactly are you?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the areas that we're really interested in and that is of interest here, of complete streets, are what are our sidewalks like? What are our neighborhoods like when we're trying to walk, when we're trying to get from one place to another? So I can see, I can envision, and I know that other people can, be able to envision some of these areas, like on Sistrunk, near Sistrunk, or in parts of Lauderdale Lakes, because we've looked at some of the areas around Lauderdale Lakes. This would be an opportunity for walking groups to actually, and we have the resources for an amazing African-American Black women's walking group who believes in how they can actually start walking groups in their neighborhood so that they can have a better understanding of what's keeping them from actually using the parks, what's keeping them from actually being able to walk from here to there. Is it because of sidewalks not being complete? Is it because we don't have enough lighting at night? Is there a question or concern around or fear of crime? We're also working with BSO and other law enforcement so that we can pull together all of these pieces. So that would be one example of how a community could say, we're interested in partnering, and what we understand that all of these pieces will come together, but the thing that we're really interested in is how people can come together to actually use the parks and playgrounds that we have and be able to have walking groups where they feel safe and secure. Yes, ma'am.
If the city is a partner, are you looking for a financial commitment from the city?
No, absolutely not. We would always welcome it, but we know that a lot of the resources that would be put behind it would be more in kind and having people be able to be the convener of meetings and then be able to work in those ways. We know that the YMCA will be one of our lead organizations. They are well respected, and they are also a trusted community organization that people feel comfortable working with. And, of course, they have very strong healthy eating, physical activity kinds of standards that would work right into the work that we're doing.
Thank you. You brought up something I think also is very important on the cracks and sidewalks and so on. Just recently, and I mentioned at the last meeting, there seems to be some discrepancy as to what the proper height on these cracks and how they should be reported. And one of the things that we went through is quite a few people say how they can call their local city government and so on. The advertisement that's going over Channel 4, I know between 5 in the morning and 7 in the morning, there's been advertisements from a organization and telling people that they really should report to get the when there's roots that are bubbling up the sidewalk and people can trip. It's a quarter inch. If it's a quarter inch or more, they should be able to have it taken care of, and it can cause an insurance problem, apparently, if it's not reported and then somebody gets hurt. So it's something that we, I guess, should be sure that, and we can probably check with Channel 5. They would give us the advertiser that's putting it on, and it is being reported periodically.
And that's yet another way that these kinds of walking groups and the teams that come together could actually help by doing what would be considered public health kind of walking audits versus the kind of walking audits that you're looking at or that you normally see. Those kinds of things could definitely be brought to bear and be able to provide you all with an assessment of those areas. Yes. Yes, sir.
Yes. Laurie, if you'd be kind enough to go back to slide 17. My question was that first circle there, community assets and preparedness. What would be looked at as a community asset?
So a community asset for us would be with a school actually being there and then looking at some of the things that we know affect health. So, for example, an asset would be a corner store. An asset would be fast food restaurants. Even though you normally don't think about fast food restaurants and corner stores as assets, the way that we look at this, because children can consume more than 50% of their whole daily caloric intake walking to and from school, it is important to us to have those kinds of assets in the area that you are looking at, because those are ways that we can actually engage the corner store owners and the fast food restaurants to start being able to identify the healthiest food options in those areas. So that would be an asset. We also look at libraries, hospitals, parks and playgrounds. All of those would be community assets. Now, when we're talking about preparedness, we have any number of communities that have worked with us in the past who we know are ready to and understand partnering. So the Housing Authority for the City of Fort Lauderdale, they've done an amazing job of being able to reach out and work with us and with others. All around Lauderhill, especially around Lauderhill 612, that area, man, they have done amazing things. And you guys have seen what they've done with the overpass. They also have corner stores there. They have parks. They have Boys and Girls Clubs. That's another very rich element. Up at Blanche Ely in Pompano, they're now looking at putting a patch of people's access to community horticulture, Market Garden, near that school. They also have corner stores that were involved in the economic development and teaching areas that we had last year. So those are all ways of looking at how those assets are.
And Tina, if I may just add to that, as the reviewers go through this, Tina has mentioned some great with the Housing Authority and Tobacco Free, some active living and healthy eating and the clinical community linkages, and also assets in the built environment would be transit stops or would be assets. How many complete streets projects are in that area? How many mode shares or what types of modes are prioritized in that area compared to the percentage of individuals that are using active transportation, as well as bike facilities and other facilities. So there's several tree canopies, the type of the water sewage. There's other infrastructure assets that would also be looked at and scored well if those are present or if there's plans to make those happen in the near future, which is why the MPO is one of our partners on this.
Yeah, and our biggest thing is, and what the things that we've been able to accomplish over the last 3 years have been because we've had great partnerships. We have not gone into communities and done two people. We have not gone into communities and done four people. What we have done is to work with people to realize the dreams that they have for that community's health. And we believe this is an extension of that.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, if those of you involved in transit, it would be great if you decided that there is a healthy community zone around one of your major bus hubs and thought about how at those hubs we could actually bring together some of the healthy food, being able to have farmers markets or being able to have a buyer's club there for fresh fruits and vegetables that would be coming from the patches that we then link into all of these, or being able to have physical activity equipment, or being, I mean, so it's limitless. It's just a matter of determining what in your healthy community zone you'd like to see happen.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up with Mr. Ryan's question about the sidewalk and the cracks in the sidewalk with the 4 inches. The department at FDOT does have a policy, strict policy, with our maintenance rating program to evaluate all sidewalks in our district. If you do come across anyone that has this deficiency, please bring it to our attention, district maintenance office. We do have a business plan to achieve excellent satisfaction with our customers to resolve these conflicts immediately. So do not hesitate to contact the department with any type of ADA-related issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you guys so much, and we look forward to receiving your request for partnerships.
Thank you so much, Tina. And I do want to remind everyone the RFP will go live on the 15th of April. That is this Wednesday. And the geographic area of a healthy community zone is anywhere from 5 to 20 blocks linearly. So you can define your healthy community zone. It can be very small. It can be a little bit larger, whatever you'd like. But it is not an entire municipality. It is just a section within an area. We're going to jump back to our evaluation. I want to thank Jennifer Fearman and I have Jennifer Barrow. Was Jennifer's maiden name?
Yeah.
Maiden name, right? I couldn't remember if it was Fearman was the maiden name, and I don't know why I got confused there. But I guess from when we began, Jennifer was using her maiden name. So Priscilla, Peter, Ricardo, Larry, Mark, Ellen. Father, which I don't think is here, Sheila Rose, which I don't believe is here either. But I want to thank you all for being part of the initial thought process through the evaluation subcommittee and for dedicating your time to some of our meetings and getting this started. We are now happy to say that the evaluation toolkit, which is over 100 pages and provides not only the matrix that we had promised at the beginning of this contract about 18 months ago, but really goes through a full-fledged, and this was actually Larry's idea, and we're excited that you're a part of our subcommittee to bring us to that level, to do a full-fledged toolkit of why they would use that tool, how would they use that tool, and how any one of the consultants or even a city, anyone at a city can pick up the toolkit and that it would be easy and friendly to use. So we are in the final phases of it and updating it. And later on in the TAC member, I will mention how Smart Growth National Evaluation Toolkit came out recently, and I don't know if anyone was able to attend that webinar, but I know that our toolkit is a little bit different. And Lori, do you want to go through, just quickly share with us, what are the highlights of our evaluation toolkit compared to some of the national models that are starting to come out to guide individuals on evaluating all of their complete streets projects and why this one is of such advantage to Broward County?
Well, I think, I don't know if anybody was on the actual webinar that they had, but the toolkit, and I can send it out, I can send out the link when we send out the notes for this meeting, but their toolkit is sort of a high level, here's the tools that are available nationwide that you can research and find. The MPO, the Broward MPO manual that we've helped them put together, digs a little bit deeper and actually walks you through how to use these tools. So if you have never done an evaluation, how do you do the tree canopy analysis? How do you do the MMLOS? And so it walks you through those steps on the priority evaluation metrics that the MPO has selected. So it's more
a
user-friendly.
Spreadsheet.
Correct. So, and we also created a spreadsheet that is linked with the manual that would be able to record all your data pre-construction and post-construction, or even pre-program, post-program. So that would ever be able to document everything, and if someone were to ever leave, you would still have that spreadsheet documenting the evaluation.
And in addition to that, we've also created an evaluation guidelines for the MPO to be able to look at their return on investments in complete streets over a five-year period of time. So in 5 years, they'll be able to come back and evaluate and see how this program has really been worth their while and their investment. The technical assistance update and action plans. So Miramar and Lauderdale Lakes were the two that were completed. Planning policy frameworks, we've reached out to 8 cities in part that were targeted, provided the new planning and policy framework. If you all don't have that, it is available on our website for you to download, and provided guidance and assistance to those that have suggested to be able to develop policy and dig a little deeper in complete streets. The walking audits. So these began about 9 months ago and have all been completed. All of the reports have been completed. All drafts have been submitted, and the cities are just looking at them and providing feedback for them. Anything else that we'd like to add on that? Anything else, Ricardo, that you wanted to? No. Public involvement plan. So the public involvement plan, usually we would do this at the very beginning. And since this contract has been so dynamic, the MPO has really looked at their PIP and has formulated a real dynamic PIP so that in the next phase, the teams will be able to take this on and kind of strive to achieve some of the items that really have been outlined through our educational opportunities in the Safe Streets Summit and the feedback that we've received while working with our with our communities and municipalities. The interactive images and animation update. These are drafts. These are the three drafts of the animation, interactive images and animation updates. The final ones will, and hopefully we'll all be able to enjoy them in June with an actual animation and the video, and all to go along with it in June. I know a few of you are looking at your screens. Are there any comments or anything you'd like? They are in draft form, so we do have, I know, at least one more comment on two of the three.
Talk to Peter.
So we have at least one more comment, so this is your time to make a comment if anyone would like to make a comment on the interactive images. And these will be emailed to everyone, again, they'll be in the PowerPoint on the website. Okay? As we heard earlier today from Tina with the TAC member updates and the partner updates, is there anything, any upcoming events, feedback, ideas for June's TAC meeting, anything, have you joined the USDOT Mayor's Challenge, or we want to congratulate the four cities that we know have joined, and if your city is not listed on this screen, are there any others that have joined? Are there any events or anything that any of the partners would like to say? Would you like for me to read them? Could you see them? They might be a little hard to see. Fort Lauderdale, City Hollywood, Sunrise, and Lauderdale Lakes. Thank you so much. Anything from the MPO, Ricardo?
Well, actually, just wanted to know that the Broward MPO has joined the challenge as well. So as an agency, we're happy to be part of it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, that's news to me too. We got to make sure we get that out. It's great to hear. Do you know if your other part, are there MPOs that joined that also? Because
no,
I haven't heard that.
No, I mean, we just, Greg went out to the feds and
right.
We could join. So actually, I don't even know if we've joined yet, but we are
in the process. I think maybe sometimes, and I know in our neighboring jurisdictions, the MPOs are part of the county, and so if the county mayor has joined, then it's understood that the MPO has. So it's very, very exciting to see the leadership here has also taken that route. Anyone else? Any updates? Priscilla?
Upcoming events. I saw Christine back there.
Yes?
Does she want to talk about the transportation summit? Sure. May 20th?
You can come up.
Hi there, Christine Fancy with the City of Fort Lauderdale. Just want to invite all of you to the 2015 Street Smarts Transportation Summit happening at the Heisinger Pavilion on the riverfront on May 20th. It's going to be an all-day event from 8 to 5 to include really a dynamic discussion, of course, about how to change our culture to be more multimodal. And we're really excited. We've Gabe Klein of ex-commissioner from the City of Chicago has agreed to be our keynote speaker. So he'll be opening up the event along with our commissioners and our mayor are going to be there to really welcome you. We're going to try to do a one-on-one in the afternoon. So you have FaceTime with leadership from not only the city but the county. We also hope to invite other mayors as well. So all the information is on our website, fortlauderdale.gov, and then go to the events, and then May 20th, and you can find a link. And we only have 120 seats, so and we already have like 25 people registered. So seats are going fast. So let me know if you have any questions, or Karen, and we can help you out, get you to the right location. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other events? And Priscilla, do you want to give us a recap? Or I think we have Let's Go Biking in here, don't we?
Yeah,
we
do.
Okay, sorry. That was an event.
And we're going to have one event at the Patch Community Gardens in Davie Beach. It's Birth Month, so they're going to be having special celebrations on April the 18th from 9 to 1. And also any CRAs or any people who live in the communities that use SNAP or WIC, they have double dollars. So for every dollar they spend at the Patch Garden purchasing fresh organic fruit and vegetables, they'll get an extra dollar's worth of food as well. So that's
exciting.
An added advantage. Thank you.
Thank you, Lena. Okay, everyone. Well, if anything occurs after the meeting, please email us and we'll make sure we get it out to everyone. So the project feature for today, we're switching lane elimination.
And we just want to have a couple of things before. Yeah.
You know, at the last meeting, we went over some of the successes for the last 2 years, and we mentioned how we were able to secure funding for over $100 million worth of projects in the next 5 years. And what I forgot to mention is our great partner has been FDOT. You know, they're designing and constructing all our projects.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Larry, for reminding me of that. So this District 4 is very progressive. I mean, they developed the lane elimination process that's actually been embraced through the state. So it's started here. So today, if you get here to let you know what has happened since and some of the projects they already have in place.
Thank you.
Okay, hi, good afternoon. My name is Chan Wong from FDOT District 4 Planning and Environmental Management. So I'm the lane elimination coordinator for the district. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of the best practice here. FDOT is currently faced with a pretty steady flow of lane elimination requests where we have to at least look at the opportunity to eliminate two lanes on the state highway. We'd like to share some of our experiences, some of the things that we consider in evaluating those lane elimination requests. So, what is lane elimination? This term actually was coined by FDOT District 4 in 2009 when we began to map out the process. Others have used the terms road diet, a lane reduction, or lane channelization. We prefer lane elimination because it actually involves in the elimination of one or more travel lanes on the roadway to make room for pet bike facilities or other safety or aesthetic features. So lane elimination is a subset of the complete streets initiatives. I guess you guys know very well what complete streets are. According to Wikipedia, complete street is a design, is a transportation policy and design approach that requires streets to be planned, designed, operated, and maintained to enable safe, convenient, and comfortable travel and access for users of all ages and abilities regardless of their mode of transportation. Complete streets will allow for safe travel by those who walk, bicycle, drive, ride a public transit, or deliver goods. So my presentation this afternoon will touch on the lane elimination overview. What does it do to the local government and local community? And also give a little background history of the process development, which is then within the last year led to some statewide guidance on the lane elimination. And also what the lane elimination review and approval process entails. I'm also going to give a few examples of the lane elimination projects here in District 4 and also touch on our ongoing efforts that can help the MPO's complete street initiatives. So in the spirit of complete street initiatives, we often hear that lane elimination projects will support local government and community vision. And providing opportunities for other modes of transportation, such as pet bikes, for safety and aesthetics, for calming traffic, and for on-street parking. So overall, the concepts of lane elimination, which is part of the complete street, are promoted as offering improved safety, health, economic, and environmental outcomes in the affected community. So some of the key considerations for Florida DOT when we consider this lane elimination is that obviously they need to be approved by FDOT. And although these projects often have benefits, they are often also challenging to implement, which over the years led to the development of some formal guidance on how the approval is obtained and also to assure consistency and a thorough analysis and most importantly, the coordination and communication with the local governments. as we try to implement some of these land illumination projects. So I'll touch on some of the key considerations later. So prior to 2009, District 4, from my understanding, or the Florida DOT in general, really didn't have a formal process. What we were fighting is the department was approached in some of our traditional outreach activities, whether it was the county commissioner or city commissioner meetings or public meeting, where individual project manager or department staff were approached, kind of from a more piecemeal approach, asking if the department will consider lane elimination, reducing the number of lanes. It was never a standard process or that multidiscipline evaluation to look at the project. So since 2009, District 4 took a multidiscipline approach. We actually mapped out the piecemeal approach on how that was happening and how it was lack of consistent coordination that requires on those requests. And we actually developed a more formal process that involved multiple offices and really give the applicant, which is usually the local government, that approach of a more standard approach to actually have the dialogue with the department. In 2013, we actually had several projects to look back and really took an opportunity to refine the process, to actually see from lesson learned, best practices from some of those examples, how we could better define the process. And some of the key points we added that year were having a clear milestones and deliverables at key points of the process, which not only helped to define our clear expectation from the FDOT staff who reviewed the request, and also helped the applicant as well. In 2013, Central Office really had embarked on developing guidelines for a statewide approach to lane elimination requests. So District 4 process that was developed in 2009, that was refined in 2013, together with District 7, which is in Tampa Bay area, a process that includes a pretty comprehensive checklist. Those processes, these two processes were circulated for review and to get some input. And just recently, Central Office published a statewide guidance on this lane elimination request. So the process that have been laid out thus far really defined three main steps. The key from the lesson learned was conducting that initial meeting with the local government and really getting a good understanding of for what the vision was and on that particular facility, giving the applicant an understanding of what the department would want to evaluate and consider if they were to continue to pursue the opportunity. So the first meeting and the first step in the process is really to identify any fatal flaw, any heavy lifting that we would have to go through in a collaborative effort with the local government and the DOT analysis to say these are the things that really are critical to the corridor, and that we are making sure that those considerations are being addressed. That initial meeting also engages the multidiscipline look at whether it's the planning office look at the long-range needs, the design office look at the design criteria perspective, traffic operation looking at the traffic circulations and operations, or the multimodal offices that look at the transit and bed pipe issues. So we really get those groups involved in the initial meeting. We also have a checklist that's actually given out to the applicant at the first meeting to give them an understanding of what the effort will entail. So that we get through the first step, we get the understanding that, okay, this might be a viable project to pursue. We did then have the applicant and local government on getting to the more detailed analysis, which is the step two. That really focuses on traffic analysis, the long-term needs, and some operational concerns. And also at that point, they have the option to put the visions on paper, to develop some concept plans, some rendering, things like that, so we can evaluate in the report. And the final step, step three, is the final review. And I mentioned earlier, it is when we vetted out the project from a list of considerations that are important to the department. But also at that point, the local government has gone back to the city or county commission, gone back to the public, and really conducted some of the outreach to really assure the department that this is the supported project from the local government perspective. And then we conduct the final review and then notify Central Office DOT on the recommendation regarding the approval of the lake illumination application. So the list of lake illumination considerations that I've been mentioning, so here it is. Some of those considerations range from safety and crash histories to the long-range needs for that corridor. So not only from the traffic and capacity perspective, but also all of those considerations, parking environment, design exception variations, emergency evacuations, freight route, community support. And often the question really got to evolve into how the projects can be funded, and also consistency with the local government plan. That's really an overview of the lake illumination process. And I think it's important for us to find that the process you could follow in each case. The following are some of the lake illumination projects here in District 4. This is State Road A1A in Fort Lauderdale from Oakland Park Boulevard to Flamingo Avenue. So it was approved and constructed, actually. Original typical section here was a six-lane divided roadway. You can see it has been it's gone down to two lanes in each direction with a buffer bike lane. And it should be mentioned that A1A north of Flamingo Avenue here and south of Oakland Park Boulevard is a four-lane roadway. So this six-lane roadway bulge-out section actually is a natural selection for lane illumination request. And this is State Road A1A, also in Fort Lauderdale, but between Sunrise Boulevard and Northeast 18th Street. Before Hurricane Sandy in November 2012, it was a four-lane undivided facility. So next couple of slides here really depict the washout damage by Hurricane Sandy on the section of A1A. So from FDOT perspective, it is important to at least rebuild this roadway to get the traffic flowing as soon as we could. So we actually implemented an emergency project with the reduced typical section in order to get traffic flowing as soon as possible. We implemented one lane in each direction with a central turn lane. Coincidentally, this reduced typical section on this section of A1A is what the city envisioned on the beachfront roadway. So after conducting a thorough traffic analysis on the subject, A1A, a three-lane typical section for longer-term improvement was eventually constructed. The next example here is Power Line Road from Sunrise Boulevard to Northwest 29th Street. This section of Power Line Road traverses a mostly residential neighborhood in two cities, City of Fort Lauderdale and Wilton Manor. The City of Fort Lauderdale approached the department during the letting phase of the resurfacing project on Power Line Road They wanted to eliminate one travel lane in each direction on Power Line Road, essentially from a six-lane divided roadway to a four-lane divided roadway to provide a buffer bike lane. The intent is to provide a safer, livable environment for the adjacent residents with the options of providing bike lane facility. The next one is Dixie Highway in Pompano Beach. This is between McNabb Road and Southwest 2nd Street. This is also a piggyback lane elimination project on an upcoming resurfacing project. The city wanted to eliminate one travel lane on the one-way pair roadway from three-lane to two-lane in each direction. The intent is also to provide buffer bike lane, on-street parking to adjacent businesses, as well as enhancing streetscaping. The next slide is Hillsboro Boulevard from Dixie Highway to US 1 in Deerfield Beach. Again, another piggyback project that tacks on an upcoming resurfacing project. The city has a downtown revitalization master plan that envisioned Hillsboro Boulevard being reduced from a six-lane undivided roadway with center two-way left turn lane to a four-lane divided roadway with buffer bike lane and improved roadway access management. And this one is actually in Palm Beach County, Northern Palm Beach County, US 1 in Tequesta. The previous three lane elimination mentioned earlier have been approved but not constructed yet. The following one are the lane elimination proposals that are still being under review. So this one is being under review. US 1 in Tequesta from Beach Road to Martin Palm Beach County line. The village of Tequesta is requesting the considerations of reducing US 1 from a six-lane divided roadway to four-lane divided roadway to enhance multimodal design, safety, and to create a sense of place. And this one, back to Broward County, is in City of Hollywood, Stairway A1A from Sheraton Street, from Hollywood Boulevard to Sheraton Street. City of Hollywood actually is requesting the consideration of realigning this A1A, this section of A1A, from a five-lane typical section to varying cross-section from four-lane to five-lane. So although the proposal may not have to go through the lane elimination process, since we have the process structure, we are still the leading office that coordinate multi-office assessments on this request. This one is Dania Beach Boulevard from US 1 to A1A. The city envisions a reduction from six lane to four lane typical section, and the intent is to promote other modes of transportation, providing a buffer bike lane and wider sidewalk in each direction. So I mentioned earlier that FDOT lane elimination guidance that was recently published. So it has the phase one, which is more of a resource document, and that's got the example I mentioned earlier in District 4 and District 7 processes. It also got some national case studies and also processes from around the country. The phase two is actually the statewide effort that is really looking into evaluating the opportunity to implement the standard statewide process on the steps to follow in evaluating the lane elimination request. So now that you know, FDOT really has a very structured and defined lane elimination review and approval process, and the statewide guidance, local government and MPO can actually utilize this resource to complement the complete street initiatives, such as understanding the technical analysis required and expected milestones and needed for a lane elimination. And also its schedule and timeline. So this process definitely could be used on, even though it's for a state facility, it could be used on non-state facilities as well. And I also want to mention our ongoing efforts, lane elimination assessment efforts in the district. And in this assessment, district will produce a map showing the existing and proposed lane illumination projects in the five counties in the district. We will also propose evaluation criteria for identifying feasible lane illumination project candidates in the district. And the following slides are resource documents where you can get at the district and the statewide and the FHWA level on lane illumination or road diet. And with that, I conclude my presentation. Any questions?
We're going to start with questions back here, then go up to the diocese a moment.
May I?
I have some concerns, and I'm wondering if they're already looked at. And one of my concerns is when they do some of these developments is to make a wider sidewalk, they have a wider curve to make it faster to go into parking areas and so on. And one of our major complaints as a blind person and blind group with the National Federation is of the blind. Is many of them, you have the cut where the person is to disembark from the sidewalk at an angle, and you're walking actually out into traffic. If a person's in a wheelchair, they're going out into traffic. We ask that they be direct, straight across, so that you have two places in that wide curve, so that people that are blind or in a wheelchair are within the white lanes and necessary gaps to go straight across, not out into traffic. Is this being looked at?
And I believe this is related to an ADA design. Am I right about that?
It has been. I know that Las Vegas has changed their ways so that all of it is direct out there. I'm wondering, is this being, are you looking at those things for us here, too?
Hello again, Mr. Ryan. That's a good question. As far as parking is concerned, that's usually through our design standards, and FDOT has, relatively strict design standards when it comes to parking. However, there are revisions to it made every year. So this is something that we can definitely bring up to the design standards team.
I'm not really concerned so much as, well, I'm concerned about parking, but I'm saying if a person is walking on the sidewalk, you don't want them going off at a 45-degree angle and have to come back either to the left or the right to get between the white lines that have to cross the major street.
So let me understand this correctly. You're saying it's a bi-directional curb ramp?
Yeah.
It all depends on the configuration of the return. But generally, we try to accommodate two separate ramps with the intersection. It all depends on the intersection design. Normally, for a tighter radii, it'll be, that's going to be tough, especially right-of-way restrictions, to accommodate two separate ramps. But as a designer, we usually try to accommodate two separate ramps. But if there is one curb ramp that's used bi-directional, it's generally due to right-of-way restrictions or because of the radius. It's a tighter radius, so for instance, like a 20 or 25-foot radius versus a 35, 40, 45-foot radius where it's much wider turn, you're able to accommodate two separate ramps.
But you do see what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
About what happens when you're going off at the angle. I mean, you take somebody like myself with no vision at all, mm-hmm. or you have a guide dog, the guide dog is trained to go within the white lanes, and you don't even have a white a line to have the dog see that you have to go to the right or left to get directly across.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. Generally, also what district maintenance tries to do is provide a thermoplasty with the 12-inch stripes, so, some sort of thickness. Where possibility to use the cane or the feel the white stripes between the crosswalk, but then again, if you have any sort of specific intersections in mind, that we can definitely take a look at possible redesign.
Then there's another important issue that comes to my concern, and you had a wonderful person in here last time that mentioned that there is a camera that can show pictures of who may be in the area that they have to cross the street. And shortly after that meeting, we had somebody killed in a wheelchair because a truck could not see low enough over the side of their truck and ended up killing the person in the wheelchair. If everybody captures the news, and you may remember that case. It just recently happened within the last 2 months, I believe. Now, when I was heard the story, I just say the Lord works in so many mysterious ways of maybe trying to bring something quickly to somebody's attention. But the thing is that I think it also, if these cameras are available, maybe we should have a camera that should show the person waiting to cross the street also pictured up on a pole or something, so that these vehicles that are higher and cannot see below the edge of the fender, that it would be some sort of signal or a picture of the person in that lane waiting to get across the street. That's one of the problems with being able to make a right on a red light here in this area. Maybe we should stop, do something about permitting that, because these accidents have happened and have happened quite numerously since I've been involved with transportation. And I really feel that we should do something and think about it when we're designing the right-of-way for also people that are walking or even riding a bicycle. If we're going to be able to get them across the street, we got to make sure that the vehicle that is wanting to make a right on a red, either they still can do it, and if they can, there should be a picture up there that the person driving that vehicle knows that there is a person in that lane waiting to come across the street. Like I say, if you check your news recently, you will find that where that person was killed recently. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Yeah, well, it's not a question. I just want to point out that Broward County has their own lane elimination procedure, which surprisingly looks an awful lot like DOT. Basically, we just emulated theirs, shortened it up just a tad, one less meeting or something like that. But basically, it's the same review process. And if you're going to go through that process, make your request for the information through planning. So either through Kevin or Henry Smezik, and that'll get you started on that process.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said wrong something about A1A and Hollywood.
Yes.
Even though you're not looking for a lane elimination.
Yes.
It still comes under your purview?
Not review, but coordination effort.
Okay. Is the plan there to put in the bike paths and the sidewalks or wider sidewalks without eliminating a lane?
I believe that's the city's vision. I don't know if there's any City of Hollywood representative here.
I'm Kimberly, and I'm from the Hollywood CRA. And as you had mentioned, we started to do a lane elimination process, and we're kind of tweaking it.
Yeah.
But I can get back with you. We have a consultant, Kimberly Horn, working on it.
My other question is, I know that somebody has been surveying Johnson Street between Dixie and 31st, the 10 blocks, 21st and 31st, and that I saw that that increment of Johnson Street was included in a potential plan for complete streets. Has that been in any kind of process, or how far along is that process?
I can answer that.
Yes.
Dale Bryant with City of Hollywood. The Department Division of Engineering and Architectural Services is looking to implement a complete streets. The problem we're running into right now is the required taking of properties. In other words, there's just not enough room to do everything we want to do. So we're trying to create different scenarios where we have bike lanes, where we have shared lanes, wider walks. So we've got about three or four different scenarios we're exploring right now. Patricia.
Does that mean eliminating the center lane?
On one, I don't know if that's an option because I think a lot of people have voiced their opposition to eliminating the center lane.
I wouldn't be sitting here without it.
Yeah.
I took the ambulance on Wednesday.
Yeah. It's, they've got about four scenarios, but basically I'm not that involved in that one, but John Vogt is and Clarissa. And I know they're going out to the community, so basically whatever we want as residents, that's what's going to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, Joy?
John, when you're doing this lane elimination analysis, are you looking at things like mid-block crossings and right turn lanes and the width of those things as well as part of that analysis?
Yes, definitely. Those are key considerations of the, traffic operations and pedestrian crossing are part of the evaluation.
Have you added mid-block crossings on some of these examples that you gave us?
The
Fort Lauderdale ones.
Okay. The Fort Lauderdale, I guess, with the final design now, has the mid-block crossing.
Both the North of Sunrise project.
Yes.
That's a couple that are going to be added, and then North of Golden Park as well, we added a new crossing.
Okay, I guess they do exist.
Not enough of them, in my opinion, but there you go.
Yes.
Thank you.
Charles, about that question, and I know the department is very supportive of freight and goods movement, so I imagine you're factoring that in the evaluation, but I'm just curious, when you get the applications for lane reduction, what are some of the criteria you use? Are you factoring the need for parking and loading and unloading zones?
Yeah,
sort of thing?
Definitely. We do an observation to see what are the freight route is there or not, and to see whether there's any loading and unloading activities.
Mm-hmm.
So those are important key considerations to consider.
Okay.
Definitely.
That's important.
Yes.
To the freight community. Thank you.
All right.
One last question. Over here.
Okay, yes.
How will lane elimination not lead to traffic congestion in those areas?
Well, we took a long-term, long-range evaluation of the capacity. So usually if there's no growth in that area, the capacity issue is not really a key problem. So if it's not level service F, definitely... not level service C definitely is one of the criteria for lane elimination selection. If it's way over congested, definitely we have to take a closer look at what the capacity issue is. All right.
And as our transit system improves and our communities become healthier, begin to walk and bike more and use more multimodal, I'm sure there'll be less people in cars and using more of those other facilities added. So the next slide for the presentation. Thank you so much. That was a wonderful presentation. I thank you, Ricardo, for that introduction. I think we do, for some reason, as partners, tend to forget what a vital role FDOT has played in all of this and moving our agenda forward and being such a supportive partner. So thank you for that presentation. We have a few consultants in the room that work on lane elimination, and I don't know if there's anyone outside of the cities that might have questions that wanted to talk or any other experiences on lane elimination that we want to spotlight or highlight today. Okay. So there's a challenge that we wanted to bring up. As we have mentioned previously, we want to highlight a success and a challenge at every meeting. So today's challenge feature is going to be a discussion, and Larry, I'm hoping that you will be able to guide us on this discussion, but it's a discussion on making crossing the street safer for a person with disabilities. When we define a person with disabilities, it's not just visually impaired, it may be physically impaired or hearing impaired, or even with different levels of capacity. And so as I'm going to, how do we help? The question is for the group today in our discussion is how do we help make crossing the streets safer for persons with disabilities? And we being those around this room from cities and
well, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, it depends on what the conflict is. If it's, you know, for instance, a mid-block crosswalk, if we've noticed, if the department is doing analysis on, you know, pedestrians, if there's a bus stop in either location and, you know, there's analysis to include a mid-block crosswalk, you know, that's obviously part of the analysis. Curb ramps, we try to, you know, accommodate ADA. The slope of the crosswalk not exceeding a certain percentage. You know, we also have cross slope on the sidewalk. So, for instance, we don't want that to exceed, you know, cross slope 2%. Of course, cracks, deficiencies in the sidewalk, any sort of barriers. We want to make sure you have at least a 4-foot clearance, especially with, you know, trash cans, light poles, you know, we're trying to make accommodations for that as well for as far as clear width. But it, I guess it all depends on the scenario and the conflict. And once again, I said earlier, the department, especially for state roads, the department does have a business plan in play where we have a transition plan to accommodate, you know, most ADA concerns within a reasonable time. So, for instance, sidewalk cracks, adding detectable warnings, our maintenance rating program, we usually can have that corrected generally soon. Now we start getting more complex, where we start saying about mid-block crosswalks, you know, adding, you know, tight, you know, curb return for intersection design. That gets a little bit more complicated, and that goes into actually our roadway design projects. But once again, we do have a process in play where we do receive complaints, we receive, you know, ideas, concepts from the, you know, local municipalities, and the department does, you know, reasonable accommodations to provide, you know, a solution to all types of ADA concerns and deficiencies. And I could turn it over to Ricardo with Broward MPO. I know they have a lot of projects as well that they're trying to accommodate ADA, and, you know, we have a great working relationship with the county. You know, any questions at all, you know, feel free to contact district maintenance or a local municipality.
Okay, so we all know, and Mark, just before we get to the county's perspective on this, we know that from a federal standpoint, we're required, per se, to accommodate individuals with disabilities. But where is it that we find as a group, on a municipal or county or state level, that are in our state roads and facilities, do we feel that we are falling short in Broward County? And what are some of the actions that this group can move towards to fill those gaps and to assure that we are addressing the needs of those with disabilities?
Okay, this isn't necessarily the county perspective, but I agree with Mr. Ryan in terms of the red light, right turns on red. It's probably one of the most challenging things for somebody with disabilities to deal with, whether it's a physical disability or a cognitive disability. You know, just knowing that, you know, not everybody thinks about looking over their shoulder to make sure no one's turning behind them.
Amen.
You know, so that's one. And then, Andrew still here? Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I may very well be. You know, giving the pedestrian signal the leading phase in the intersection instead of having it all go at the same time. If the pedestrian can get a head start as they cross through that intersection before the through movement gets to go, that will also help them get there a little quicker and make it easier. Did I get that right?
No, you got that right. I mean, obviously that would be a policy decision. We don't
right.
want to do that.
But, you know, look at the changes we've made in the last 20 years to get to the point where DOT is talking about lane elimination. You know, policy changes.
You didn't want to go there today, Mark?
That's okay. You know, policy changes, they happen if the pressure is there. So, I mean,
right.
Anything's possible.
Just 1 second. I want to make sure that stays on the table, though, that the policy suggestion to just continue to debate and decide and educate on what the pros and cons would be if that decision were to be take it on. And I heard two voices. We're going to go right behind me and then to the other voice.
It was me. But Karen,
oh, Priscilla.
You go first.
Okay.
She had her hand up.
Thank you, Priscilla.
One of the areas I think we should focus on insofar as making the crosswalks friendly for disabled people would be where there are bus stops. A lot of people are using paratransit service that would use the bus if they could get across the street after they got off the bus. Most of the time it's with the, I would say, the divided roads where you have two or three lanes in each direction, and there's a long period of time from the time you step off the curb till you get to the other curb. A sighted person can stop midway on the median, but to focus on getting the crosswalks accessible where there are bus stops would be the best place to start.
Nick, any comment on that, or is there any, have you all?
One maybe item for discussion and debate maybe look forward at is right now if we have a near side bus stop, a stop before the intersection, and there is a dedicated right-hand turn lane, we have to place our bus stop not at the interchange, but before the dedicated right-hand turn queue, because we're not allowed to block to stop our bus in a right-hand turn lane. So in other places across the country, they will allow a bus to sit and to board and let passengers at the actual interchange inside of our dedicated right-hand turn lane, where we can't. So that forces us to push a lot of our bus stops further back, sometimes, you know, hundreds of feet from the intersection. And so if that policy was eliminated and we could move our bus stops closer to the actual curb and closer to where the crossing is, it could eliminate some of those conflicts, I think. But the downside is you'd have a bus that stopped so that you would be blocking the flow of traffic through the right-hand turn lane.
Can I make a suggestion?
We're going to, Tom, 1 second, we're going to go to Priscilla, mm-hmm. then Joe, and then, okay, Priscilla?
So beginning of March, Larry and I and some design folks from FDOT, we participated in a two-day FTA PED pedestrian training for ADA accessibility features, and one of the things we noticed is the audible signals on our intersections. We crossed blindfolded with a white cane on Commercial and Prospect.
And you're still here.
Yeah, I'm still here. And it reminds me of the time I walked across Broward Boulevard with Tom and Debbie for White Cane Day, but we had an audible signal. But in this intersection, it was very faint.
Yes.
Because obviously there's more traffic on Commercial and Prospect, so I'm wondering, I know it's an ADA law that it has to have the audible. Where are we in Broward County in making all these intersections with the audible improvements with the audible? And I think that's a Broward County
County folks, any responses?
Yeah, I mean, really we're not making any progress on that right now. We did have the ADA meeting a couple months ago that these things were brought up to us. And we will be programming these improvements as we can, but no plan yet.
So if we notice that there's a major intersection that does not have any audible help, how can we report that to the county?
You can just report it directly to us online.
Okay.
On our website.
Okay.
Thank you, Priscilla.
They're audible. They're adjustable.
Joe?
Yeah, I wanted to comment that many times I see site plans that come in, and it seems like...
I'm so sorry, you have site plans?
Site plans.
Okay.
Yeah, site plans for a new project.
Yes, yes.
And many times the developer is focused on accommodating the disabled parking spaces and not focused on getting pedestrians into the project. And they rationalize that by saying that they're only required by minimum ADA to connect into the sidewalk. And somewhere the sidewalk has to connect to the project, but it may be in a completely inconvenient location on the project. So I think there's scope for municipalities to look at their land development codes and see how you are integrating pedestrian access as a component of your site plan review.
Great, so that's the fourth thing I've heard today, and great suggestion, Joe. And now, Tom?
Would you rather I stand up? I don't mind, Jenna. This reminds me of, and I'm thinking that, you know, if you have to have the bus stop anywhere, it should be possible to have a little added on advertisement as you are stopping that bus that comes over the system. You must cross to the center, and then you could have a pole in the center, and you must wait at the center, press the button to continue across the street. There are some places in the north that have that kind of design, that if you are, know that you can only get halfway across and you have to press another button to allow you to cross the other side, that could work only if people are trained to use it. And one of the ways to train them would be having the advertisement on the bus. At this next stop, you can only cross halfway. Press the button in at that stop in order to continue walking across. And it's not something that is impossible. It's something that can be done. And these audible signals that we like is the ones that even deaf people can use by putting their hand on the button, and it shakes when they're allowed to be able to go. It vibrates. And I like them, the ones that we had installed along commercial. And by the way, my wife should stand up because she used to work for DOT for 31 years. And many of you may even know her from working there. Oh, yeah, you're all the younger gap. I forgot that. But seriously, there are things that can be dealt with. And I like the fact that I'm able to be here to work out and try to come with some ideas. And hopefully your pins are activated and taking them. Thank you.
And is it correct to assume that we do not have that kind of a system in our current transit system?
Not with those particular announcements. We do have onboard vehicle annunciation, and that system's actually being updated as a part of our new KABL project.
Mm-hmm.
Something we are adding, though, and I found out 2 weeks ago, which I thought was kind of exciting, maybe towards this conversation, is we're going to have more external announcements on our bus for people who are actually pedestrians on the sidewalk. So when our bus is approaching a right-hand turn, has its right-hand turn signal, it's actually going to say, bus is going to turn right, bus is turning right, bus is turning right, to allow the pedestrians to know the intent of where the bus is going. Beyond just a blinker, it's going to be an audible announcement while during left and right turn. So that's something that's kind of adding to this conversation, you know, a little bit more information, audible, not just visual.
And is there a possibility to explore, instead of eliminating the lane or instead of looking at, you know, different possibilities, if someone would need to cross at an intersection, would there be able to be?
I'd be curious to see if there's if they have an example of what system does that, announces it in the interior of the bus, and if you can cross all the way over, mm-hmm. like kind of see how that.
Tom, do you know what system does it by any chance, or where it's been featured?
They're half cross, like I say, and they have a similar pole
at
the center market. I'll have to check because I've seen them, but I don't remember exactly where right now.
Okay.
Yeah, check I on. Mean, in terms of interior announcements, we have the ability to play whatever interior announcements we want to play. You know, and usually we have a combination of, you know, it's kind of, you know, we have an ADA minimum that we have to do for interior bus announcements, you know, so we have to announce the major connections, you know, when we're approaching a stop, we have to connect, you know, we announce usually which routes connect at that point. What major facilities, destinations are there, if there's a hospital or a major school or something like that. And we play public service messages, you know, in terms of, you know, please stand behind the yellow line or, you know, do this or do that, or we have transit watch for security purposes and, you know, things of that nature. So we can really play whatever announcements, you know, that are needed. So I'd be curious to see maybe if this is something that can be explored, or if we can see an example where they've used internal bus announcements. In terms of poles, I haven't seen that. That sounds like something extra, some sort of extra capital project. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
you know, having something extra attached to the bus stops that would give you more information.
Anyone else would like to add something to today's challenge conversation?
Peter?
Yes, and Nick, this might be a question directed at you. As far as BCT goes, you spoke about near-side stops and their, how they have to be placed behind the right turn lane, but would it maybe be worth looking at, and I'm sure it's been considered, but is it more difficult looking at far-side stops?
Yeah, I mean, at major interchanges, you know, we usually will do far-side stops. I mean, we do both. It's all context-sensitive to
right.
what the right-of-way constraints are and, you know, what's going on at the intersection, you know, but absolutely. Absolutely, we're looking at far-side and near-side stops. But we know there are times where we have to do near-side stops, and the issue is when we do near-side stops, there's all these right-hand turn lanes everywhere, and invariably it always ends up, you know, hundreds of feet from the intersection.
A question for Ricardo. Ricardo, we have mentioned many items today and discussion with the TAC, and once a year we get together as a TAC and we discuss what are the accomplishments of TAC, but also what's kind of the future direction of TAC. As we go into the second phase or the second discussion of challenge features, there seems to be an interest or just ideas of things that should be pursued or concepts that should be further explored. How will you, being our Complete Streets Manager for the MPO, advise for the TAC to move forward on these challenges? What are some thoughts?
Every project that's being designed or put forward by the MPO has to be ADA compliant.
Right.
I think one of the things that we learned from this group is, like the comments from Mr. Ryan about the angled sidewalks, which there's no guidance. There's nothing, you know, if you do angled sidewalks, nothing in the ADA guidance says it's wrong.
But it's qualified.
Sometimes it's not even applied. So one of the things that we've been hearing, and this is why this act is so useful, is comments like that we can actually report to our engineers or designers design the facilities properly. As we move forward, I think the input that we're getting from some of our TAC members is very useful for us, because not only are we planning projects, but we're also designing projects. So, you know, I know Priscilla has been very active in getting some ADA knowledge for the MPO. We definitely want to make it a priority for our next phase. So what are we going to do now? We're just going to, listen
okay.
more.
So just maybe as a general recommendation, as we do move forward and plan out some of those activities for this TAC to embark on, to consider these challenges and not to just only have conversations, but to recognize that some of our current standards, as maybe before 2009 with FDOT, lane elimination might have been something that really didn't have a set standard or way of consideration. There might be a time might have come that we will recognize that we will have more individuals in the communities with the way things are going that will be... will be faced with disabilities earlier on in life, and so we do want to try to accommodate and encourage them to be active.
And absolutely, and we also want to commend FDOT because they're listening and they're making changes. And they're making very substantial changes to the guidelines, to the policies, to the complete streets, and so we the partnership that we have with them is it's unique. It doesn't happen anywhere else in the country. Mm-hmm. So we're going to continue working together with them and continue doing what we're doing now. So we're going to step it up for the next phase and see where we go from there.
Thank you, Ricardo. We want to let you all know we did have our second annual Let's Go Biking event. And I'd like to ask Priscilla Colleges, the MPO representative and coordinator of the Let's Go Biking event. We heard it was a great success by the surveys and the videos and just kind of the feedback. If you'd like to share a little bit about that with us, Priscilla.
Yes, and it's too bad I don't see Sheila Rose or anybody from Coconut Creek, but we had 105 bicyclists participate the day, Sunday, March 22nd. We had over 150 people at the event. I know Stewart was there, and Peter, our team, Daniel, Ricardo. And we have an excellent video on our website under March's Bike Month. The city of Coconut Creek, they have a drone that flies, and they captured everybody riding their bike, so it was really, really great footage. The city of Coconut Creek said that their residents love the event so much that they're going to actually budget it to have it every year at the city of Coconut Creek. So basically, the ride was from Sable Pines Park to Trade Winds to Butterfly World and then back to Sable Pines Park, and so it was about 6 miles. We had a lot of kids. We gave away 120 helmets And I think we had like 20 helmets left, and they were all little kid size. So we ran out of the large, extra large that you guys had for us. We gave away giveaways. We had tables and tables of giveaways. All of them were gone. We also did a bike raffle through the commuter services. So a young lady did win a bike, brand new bike. So that was excellent. And B-Cycle was there. They also gave memberships out for free memberships for a year. I think they did four. So it was a great event.
Yeah, I think Flippany was there also, another one of our TAC members.
Flippany, yeah, they unfortunately had a, their staff had a problem and didn't make it to the event.
Oh, I know.
Because
they promoted it so heavily.
Yeah,
that they were
our sponsor, but they had an emergency.
Oh, okay.
Last minute. But so our sponsors were Tri-Rail as well. They were giving out free giveaways. Commuter services, B-Cycle, City Co.
So exciting.
So yeah, it was great. So next year, I hear it's going to be in Pembroke Pines. So
ooh.
I'll be reaching out to Pembroke Pines staff. Because
very exciting.
We have to, you know, every year.
See that they have a tandem, please.
Yeah, it would be nice to see that a tandem piece incorporated into Let's Go Biking annual event.
Yeah,
cool.
And the City of Coconut Creek, the police department was excellent. They were out there in golf carts, in little segways, motorcycles. It was, and Broward County Parks participated. They were great. They were our leader in Trayvon Parks and the golf carts. So it was a huge effort with everybody's partnership and help. It was great.
Oh, go MPO and Coconut Creek and everyone else that participated in the county.
Pembroke Pines next.
There we go, Pembroke Pines. And then Deerfield Beach also for our Safe Street Summit. So we'll have two places to feature early on next year. Before we go into next steps and closing, is there anything that anybody would like to comment or say in today's meeting? Lori? No?
No.
Sorry. So the next TAC meeting, please mark your calendars. There's no TAC meeting next month. The next TAC meeting, which will be the last TAC meeting for this phase, is on June 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. And then we will, the MPO will continue and very actively and dynamically begin phase 4 of Broward Complete Streets Initiative. So before we adjourn, Larry?
Yes. FDOT is updating its strategic plan. It's a 20-year strategic plan. It's called the Florida Transportation Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage everyone to go online. I think it's floridatransportationplan.com. And there's different future scenarios to look at and comment on, and we value everyone's comments.
Absolutely. And if you could send us that, we'll look up the link, but we want to make sure we really promote that. We're very visible in that promotion, not just to the TAC members, but also on the MPO website and on our partner website. So we'd be very glad to promote that for you. Any other comments? Anyone behind me? Okay, well, today's meeting has adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
I do. It looks like everybody came. I checked off our names. I put your initials on yours.
Thank you.
Because I was trying to, I couldn't figure out where the numbers weren't coming up, and it was that. And then Buffy was here.
No, but I want to drag. Oh, yeah, where is it? Okay, can you drag Tina? Do you have Tina's final presentation? Because she made changes.
I do. I can send it to you tomorrow. It's in our Dropbox.
Congratulations.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
I mean, you know, you just had to follow suit.
I know, right?
Yeah.
We have to
that looks
turns.
Like so much fun. I'm doing it.
No, we just planned. Sunrise, the 10 meetings of future.
Okay. Yes.
But
yeah,
leaving
that's
the city.
My
first daughter.
What were you doing?
I'm going to work for Brett County.
Oh,
also be around.
You. In the same similar capacity?
Good seeing you. I'm the director of planning and redevelopment.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations,
so, yeah. So I start there May 11th. But I don't know what my involvement will be with this group for the county.
But I hope that you'll always keep us in mind.
Sure.
And that, you know, if there's anything that ever comes up that you
want
to feature or highlight, please, you know,
sure.
Know that we're a resource.
But what I was going to say as far as the city is concerned, I don't yet know who's... I asked, you know, like the assistant city manager who he wants to assign, and he hasn't gotten back to me yet on who he's going to assign. So I'll shoot
not
an email at some point.